there's a reason for that, which I won't bore you with, but we are trying to get it back to the norm, which will hopefully happen immediately we come back in the next quarter. So here we are. Welcome all. Apologies, please, in Kululeko, anybody?
Yes, Chairperson, good afternoon. The only apology I received was from Ms. Mashango.
Ah, right, good. And the others will join us because some of them, particularly those from the opposition parties, are taking part in debates this very afternoon. So I'll hand over then to the Land Bank. Over to you. Is Mr. Maloto here? Who's here from the Land Bank in Kululeko?
I saw Mr. Maloto. He is here.
He may have fallen away because of IT problems. Is he from the Land Bank here?
Yes, there is Mr. Rwandi Somakupula.
Okay, can you get started then, please, until Mr. Maloto joins us? Over to you. There's somebody piping in there. Is it, who is that, please?
Chairperson, this is Ayanda Kanana, the CEO of the Land Bank. We also have
Please go ahead.
Who may want to say a word or two before I start, Chair.
Okay. Over to her.
Deputy Chair, have you got opening remarks before I start with the presentation?
Thank you, CEO, and you, Mr. Green. For the opportunity.
If you can, for broadcasting purposes, my friend, can you kindly put on your video, unless it's ruled out altogether?
Okay, so I'm going to look for it. I'm
can
used to...
Ask him to unmute you.
Sorry, Cindy, what's going on?
Sorry, Honourable Chairperson, it's just that I've got Otto on the other line. He says he can't unmute. He's asking the host to...
Oh, I see. All right. IT people, can you please help Mr. Maloto?
Okay, Chair, we will
try. Thank you,
Chairperson. Oh, he's unmuted now. Mr. Maloto?
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, welcome. Your preliminary remarks, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. My sincerest apology. I've been unmuted.
No, it's fine, muted. My brother. It's fine. Go
and my video is also not on. I'm unable to unmute the video also. Thank you, Chairperson, for giving us an opportunity to engage with the committee. Our discussions with this committee are always quite useful for us. The feedback that we get...
we can see you now. Thank you, Arthur. Well, yeah, we can see Mr. Maloto.
Thank you so much. Yes, the feedback that we received from this committee is quite valuable. I'm not going to waste much time. I'm going to introduce the team. I'm having the Deputy Chairperson of the Land Board, the Land Bank Board, Deputy Tatsuayo, the Chairperson of the Audit Committee, Ms. Matane Makgatho, the CEO, Ayanda Kanana, the CEO of the Land Bank, Kensan Mukhari, and Sydney Soundi, who's the executive responsible for strategy and communication. Farid Stichling is executive responsible for post-investment monitoring service. And Lwandiso Makupula, who's responsible for commercial development banking. I'll then hand over to the CEO to go through the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Maloto. Over to you, CEO. I would suggest not more than 45 minutes. Mr. Maloto, your whole team, ideally maximum an hour, 45 minutes on average, so that we can engage. I have explained, Mr. Maloto, that actually you've been here before. Nothing much has changed. 27 years later, we still have challenges around programming. So this afternoon, there's a clash between a plenary where some of the opposition members are taking part and maybe some ANC. So we've got a clash of people who are going to be there, some and some here. I'm sorry about that. But you obviously on record, and there are enough people in this meeting to make it a productive one. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Over to the CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am unable to share the screen. I don't know perhaps if the host can assist.
The host will assist. in Kulilerko, and we've had it through our emails, and we've got it on our computers and cell phones and iPads and whatever else we use.
Okay, then I'm...
Can you try once again, Mr. Kanana?
Okay.
There we are. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson and the members of the committee, the board of the Land Bank, the colleagues, and everyone on the call. Thank you for the opportunity to present to this committee. Chair, you've limited our time to 45 minutes, so we will try and race through this particular presentation. The presentation just touches on the previous engagements that we've had, the key challenges that we have faced to date, the way to turn around our situation, the desired future state of the bank, as well as the reduced support to the agri-sector. I will then stop there, Chair, and the CFO will commence to talk about the audit issues, as well as the key financial performance information. We won't touch too much on the scorecard. Safe to say we'll take questions where the members desire to engage. So, Chair, if I may just get on with the presentation. In our last engagement, when we appeared in front of the committee, we dealt with a few issues that the committee wanted to know about, which was the recent issues of the bank, the annual report, the timelines for finalization of the 1920 annual report, which we have done, and then the issues impacted by COVID. Insofar as the Land Bank is concerned. Among some of the matters or key issues we shared was that the bank was in a debt default position since April 2020. We had been receiving quite a number of downgrades from Moody's, and there were some trends that were being observed, particularly in the 18-19 report that the committee wanted to engage with, which was a lack of growth in our book. In our loan book, the reduced interest margins, the increasing non-performing loans, Chairperson. There was then to be expected that there would be some financial losses in the 1920 financial year, and indeed there was. The bank was unable to access new funding. Sorry, there's things appearing on the screen here. Okay. The bank was unable to access new funding from the markets until its default status is been cured. The bank was unable and is unable to conclude the liability solution with its lenders without the support of the shareholder. The bank's liquidity constraints have a significant impact on the agri sector. You know, Chair, that we control almost a third of that sector in terms of lending, but to date, that footprint is deteriorating. The bank does not have the liquidity support to support the agricultural sector, and we are aware that the planting cycle that is coming up. To date, we've been able to follow a waterfall system that has been successful in creating a balance between paying lenders and paying into the sector for the purposes of planting. We have had to reduce our support to at least 50% of what we were able to do. And that 50% has constrained the sector tremendously. We have not opened up new applications for funding at the Land Bank since the default. And throughout the restructuring period, we have not been able to resume our business as normal. And in order to be able to collect the funds, support a bit of the sector, and also protect the clients, the board took a view that we should encourage clients to be able to find funding elsewhere and not to cause any more stress than we have already caused. So you will see that some of the clients have started leaving the bank through normal attrition. And as you would know, Chair, that we want to transform and develop the sector, and our ability to do so is compromised with our current state. Since then, the briefing of the last engagement with the committee in October, the challenges that I've outlined in various forms do still persist, i.e. the liquidity challenge and the default position. Even though we have collected money from the sector and been able to keep a balance between paying lenders and supporting the sector, we still don't have enough money to support everybody in the manner that we have before. The protracted negotiations to conclude the liability solution, which is our solution aimed at curing the default, getting us out of default, these negotiations have taken a life of their own at times, and we've been back and forth trying to bed them down. The bank has seen significant financial losses, and with 18-19 being restated to a loss, almost a billion, and 2.8 billion in 2019-20. And we are busy with the process for this financial year that just ended. And we've got in the presentation the numbers, so the CFO will talk to those. The risk of an unsustainable bank without any state support or limited state support, given the fiscal environment, the bank and its objectives, are at a risk of an unsustainable situation. Therefore, the lack of support to the sector, and there is a slide here that tells you how much we have been able to fund over a number of years, from 30 odd billion down to 5 billion. So the support has been limited. An additional challenge was introduced when the audit of the 1920 financial year commenced, and the outcome of that was a disclaimer citing issues by the Auditor General in terms of how our loans and advances have been managed. And this goes back over a number of years. And the CFO will talk to that. So in terms of the way forward, to turn around this situation, as I said earlier, we have been in negotiations since May 2020, and these are still ongoing. The liability solution aims to get us out of default, restructure a repayment of land bank debt in line with our repayment plan, and allow the bank to resume its normal operations. That's really the work that we've been doing over the past 12 months. There's been complexities, Chairperson, around these solutions, because there are various stakeholders that need to be satisfied with a number of things. And the three options that have been presented since last year to date have not been accepted by the parties. There is now a variation of the last option, the third option, to see if the Treasury and the lenders can find each other, and us included there, obviously. So these negotiations are quite critical to get us out of default and to chart a way forward for Land Bank and its lenders, so that we can start to support the sector again. And obviously, we cannot overemphasize the importance of these. And Chair, we must thank our lenders, we must thank the shareholder for supporting us throughout all this time. We've been on a standstill, and other than the fees, not the fees, the lender that we had to pay, lenders have really stayed put in support of these negotiations. We have got confirmation of a capital injection of 7 billion over and above the 3 billion that we received in the previous year. So these funds have been appropriated but have not yet landed in the land bank. But that just shows how the shareholder has supported us over this period. This capital injection is intended to reduce the debt from the lenders and to re-establish development and transformation in the bank. And you'll see the Chairperson that the source of repayment of these amortizations is largely the installments, so the repayments from clients, the account settlements where there's attrition, and possible sale of loan assets. So we've looked at all sorts of solutions to make sure that our lenders do get paid for those who do not want to continue their relationships. The bank is now being organized into two business divisions as part of the last solution, the liability solution 3, which will have a corporate and commercial business, and the proceeds received from those loan portfolios will then be used to settle that restructured debt. That's how we'll bring down the commercial business of the land bank to a number or a percentage or a fraction that is desired for where the bank is going. The development and transformation business, this portfolio is where the bank will focus its growth trajectory. That's really where the future focus of the bank will be. We were toying with a split of 70% development and 30% commercial, and that's what has been structured in our documents. However, we are not at a space where that can be confirmed. We still have to deal with the current debt position that we are in. But our desired state, Chair, is to change the 80-20 being commercial to 70-30, 70 being development. I won't spend too much time on this slide. It just shows you the two splits that I was referring to. So, whereas the liability solution enforces the reduction of these assets, Chair, it is imperative that we protect the sustainability of the land bank. And a solution needs to be found for transformation and development to take place and to support the sector. We are looking at our model over the next five-year period and how this model will basically take the land bank forward. Going forward, this D&T business will require state support. I think the chair of the board will also re-emphasize this matter. There is no way that the land bank on its own can handle the demands and the needs of that particular objective. But for this successful development model to work, we all know that we must give pre- and post-finance support to the farmer, and this will ensure that there is a success rate in terms of those new entrants, those smallholders, those development farms. We are anticipating that out of every rand, at least 30% of that must go to pre- and post-finance support, thereby the loan component being 70%, and that being blended further enables us to lower the fence for new entrants to come in, and to fund that, it's not the easiest exercise. So we speak a lot with our sister department, Dalrad, around their objectives, especially the blended finance program that is coming up. It aims to recognize most of what we are talking about and where we want the land bank to go. And basically, this slide just demonstrates to you that for us to get to where we want to, we need a bit of a runway. We need a bit of support. The liability solution has to be implemented. We need to be taken out of default. We need to stabilize the finances of the land bank. And over the past 12 months, we've done well to collect from the sector and keep everyone maybe half satisfied. But with the circumstances we are under, parties have understood where we are. And our growth and development trajectory will lead us to what we talk about as Vision 25 of seeing more support for development in the country. And that has got its timeline, Chairperson. It's not something that we can achieve overnight, but we are working hard to get there. In the desired state, we deal with the funding profile. You'll see there that there's increased shareholder involvement. There is development funds from local and international DFIs. There's soft loans of philanthropy, blended finance and commercial funding that we have to source across the board. The operating model has got those two divisions. One is winding down, which is the corporate and commercial book, and the development and transformation book is going to be growing. Within that space, Chair, we recognize that we will leverage a lot of partners, particularly in the private sector, We will talk to food producers in terms of offtakes to support this particular objective. We will give pre and post finance support, and we'll increase our points of presence. We talk about regionalization in the organization, and we will create market linkages to make sure that our clients are able to sell what they produce. So that pre and post finance support, that boosting is quite critical for those farmers to be able to be successful. And the outcomes here will really talk about the development effectiveness and contribution to the agricultural priorities in the country. We'll talk to financial sustainability. We'll do our best to de-risk these clients. They are seen as a risky pool, but the way we want to do it is to make sure that they are successful and sustainable, and a focus on governance and ethics. I'm going to stop after the slide, Chair, and the CFO will come. But what I wanted to emphasize is just at the bottom of this, in the middle there, that in the 2017 financial year, we were able to support the sector with over 38 billion. Ending 2018, it reduced to 32, 29 in 20, and it keeps going down. As you can see, that in 2021, that's when we were in default and we were not able to advance as much as we would have liked. And that trend, Chair, is not something that we are liking. It's really something we'd want to change. So we do need collaborative efforts with third parties who have some of them given indication, even in writing, that they want to co-partner with Land Bank in supporting the sector. So we will leverage third-party funding as best as possible. The state always has asked us, what is it that we are doing to self-help? We are not going with our hands and saying, give, give, give. We are pooling funds together so that whatever would have been the commitment, it is reduced significantly because we're working with interested private sector players. So a speedy conclusion to this liability solution cannot be overemphasized, Chair, to enable us to resume with our support for the sector, to come out with a changed land bank approach, a focus on our clients, and making sure that the sector is we are part of the success. As you have seen, the agri sector has been quite resilient of late. So I'll stop here, Chairperson, and I'm sure the CFO can navigate. But maybe before I stop, I'm not sure if Mr. Moloto wants to come in. Thank you very much.
Mr. Moloto, do you want to come in?
No, I'll allow the CFO to proceed with the presentation.
Yeah, I think it's better we deal at the end. You maybe want to make some concluding remarks and we open up. Okay, thank you. Over to the CFO.
Good afternoon, Chair. I'm struggling to share the slides.
Nkululeko Mangweni will help you with that.
Thank you, Chair. Can I start in the meantime?
In the meanwhile, please do, yes.
Thank you, Chair. So I think, Chair, the good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, members. Good afternoon, all in the call. Chair, I think the CEO has highlighted the environment in his presentation that Land Bank has been operating within, at least for the 2021 financial year. And I think key to that, Chair, is the disclaimed audit opinion that we received for the 2019-2020 audit. And the main reasons for that, Chair, was the one, the CEO has mentioned that Land Bank is in a default state. And because of that, and the fact that Land Bank made huge losses in 2019-2020, you recall, Chair, that we made 2.8 billion of losses for that financial year. This has created uncertainty on the bank's ability to continue as a going concern. The second part was around the valuation of the loans, of the loan book of LendBank. And this was because of the models that are used to determine the credit losses that the bank needs to provide for, having not been recalibrated since inception. So the models were introduced or implemented in 2016 and they hadn't been recalibrated in the last financial year. The other part was the input data, Chair, that goes into determining the credit losses on the loan book. The Auditor General was not fully comfortable with the alignment of the data to the accounting standards. And in terms of the accounting standards, they found the data to be a bit not complete and unreliable. And then the last one was around the credit management controls on the SLA portfolio. So you recall, Chair, that for the 2020 financial year, more than 50% of the loan book was being managed through intermediaries, and the concerns were raised by the Auditor General around some of the SLA management of the book. And these issues, Chair, had been identified previously by both LendBank as well as the AG, and steps had been taken to to see where we're at. If we can go to slide 20, please. That's the one that I'm talking to now. I just want to make sure that members are able to follow. If you can scroll down, up to slide 20. Thank you. Slide 20, please. Thank you. So, Chair, as I was mentioning, this, so initiatives, the board has started to take initiatives, board and management, to address these issues, Chair, around the valuation of the loan book, particularly, so around the models that we use to determine the credit losses on the book. So if I mean, around 2018 already, the bank undertook its own independent review of the credit management of the book that is managed by SLAs, and out of that developed an SLA improvement plan to address the deficiencies that were identified. The SLA improvement plan was commenced implementation thereof in 2019. And some of the outcomes, Chair, of that implementation was that so approval rights for some of the SLAs were revoked and they were performed by LendBank. And for some, a decision was taken to actually insource the book, so that resulting in the book being brought in-house and managed in-house. So some of those processes are still being implemented, especially around the insourcing part. And then post the audit, the 2020 audit, a remedial plan was developed and was implemented. And I'll talk to that in the next slide. If we can go to the next slide, please. So the remedial plan, Chair, is intended to address, I think, the deficiencies that were identified that came out of the Auditor General's findings, the one being the going concern, and I think the CEO has spoken to that matter a lot, where Land Bank needs to conclude on the liability solution to essentially take Land Bank out of its event of default. And that process is running with the support of the shareholder. We are busy negotiating with Amanda's chair with and trying to conclude on the liability solution. And then on the loans and advances, we are the remedial process is basically looking to make sure that the models that we use to determine credit losses are recalibrated. That work is currently underway. The relevant policies, so policies around credit management of the book, they are being reviewed. Some have already, the review of some has already been concluded. And then also there's a detailed exercise that Land Bank is running to validate the essentially the entire loan book. And this is to ensure, Chair, that the inputs that feeds into the credit models as identified by the AG is of the right standard, Chair, and that it complies with accounting standards. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we are busy insourcing some of the SLA books where a decision was taken to insource by the bank. Next slide, please. Thank you. So on the financial performance, Chair, I think I'll just quickly recap on the challenges that Land Bank experienced for the financial year under review. As the CEO mentioned, Land Bank is still in an event of default, and I think for this whole financial year, it's been in an event of default. The bank had low liquidity levels, particularly at the beginning of the financial year. As a result, we were only able to partially support the sector, and this is mainly because we were unable to access funding in the market. We have seen attrition of good customers seeking funding elsewhere. And obviously, Chair, this talks to it has an impact on the quality and performance of the organization, quality of the book and performance of the organization. We've seen increased funding costs owing to the default position. On the other hand, we've seen the repo rate decreasing, and this has impacted our income significantly, Chair. We have therefore seen our margins compressing significantly. We've also seen an increase in non-performing loans, Chair. In terms of the numbers themselves, if you look at our net interest income, and that is your interest income less your interest expenses. So on the net interest income, if you compare to 2020, Chair, we've seen our interest income reducing by almost by about 55%, from 651 to 291 million. Our impairments, even though they have decreased by more than 60%, Chair, they're still quite high at 714 million. Our operating expenses have decreased by around 17-18%, but still, given the significant decrease in the net interest income line, you can see, and the impairments that are still a bit higher than what we would have wanted, that this results in a loss of 970. Before I proceed, Chair, I just need to highlight that these are preliminary unaudited numbers. We are still busy finalizing, and I think the core part that's outstanding, Chair, is as we mentioned earlier, Land Bank has undertaken a remedial process to address the challenges that were identified by the Auditor General and previously internally, and that process is still underway. So we expect the outcome of that process to have an impact on the final performance of land bank check. Continuing with the silent features, if you look at the cash, our cash position has improved significantly. 2020, we closed at just 700 million. 2021, the bank had 5.6 billion of cash. Net loans and advances, I have earlier alluded to to customers leaving land banks seeking funding elsewhere. We can see, Chair, that the net loans and advances of the bank have decreased by around 8 billion compared to 2020. So we've seen a lot of attrition in that space, Chair. Funding liabilities, which is what we are working on restructuring to cure land bank out of the event of default, has decreased by about 5 billion. So we've been able to check through customer collections, we've been able to repay some of the funding liabilities. Around 13% of that has been repaid to date. And I think on this note, Chair, we also continue to service interest on our funding liabilities. I have mentioned, Chair, that we've seen margin compression. You can see if 2020, we closed the year with a net interest margin of 1.5%, and for 2021, we are sitting at 0.7%, which is quite significant, Chair. Cost-to-income ratio, it has deteriorated significantly, and the main thing there, Chair, being that the reduction that we've seen in the interest income is much higher than what the expenses have reduced by, and that's why the cost-to-income ratio looks the way it does. And then the impairment ratio has also increased. This is also a factor of the book reducing. And then I think at the bottom of this slide, we've got the non-performing loans sitting at 26.6% compared to 18.1%, which is a deterioration, Chair. That is a factor of both the book declining as well as a deterioration in the book, in the loan book. I think that's my, on the book itself, Chair. So the next slide shows the composition of the book per channel, as well as the non-performing loans that sits in each individual channel. So what you can see there, Chair, is that the direct book that has been insourced, so this is the book that was previously managed through intermediaries, it does carry a significant level of non-performing loans. You'll see that it's carrying non-performing loans at 53% compared to the other books. I think also a point to note on this slide, Chair, is that with the decision to insource some of the books that were managed by intermediaries, Land Bank now directly manages around 60% of its book, Chair. And I think by the time we're done with the last book that we're insourcing, it will be close to probably around 90%. I think I will pause there, Chair, I think, hand over to the CEO.
Thank you. CEO.
Yeah, thank you very much. So this is the slide that I said we won't spend too much time, but safe to introduce the fact that as part of making sure that the bank has a corporate plan that tracks what we are doing, we put together what we refer to as a stabilization plan of the bank, and that was then translated into some form of scorecard so that we can trace you know, the key areas that will stabilize the bank and ensure that we come out of this restructuring period at least with some measurables. So going back...
CEO, can I suggest, I mean, this is quite an important area. Okay. So I don't think we should just rush through it. And we've got a bit of time. So really, I mean, this, we'd like to know much about this. So please, don't just flip over it. It's quite important. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. No, then I'm comfortable to go through it. So the first one there that's not achieved was the liability, signed liability agreement. Obviously, we wanted to close the year having signed this agreement and making sure that the bank commits its lenders to some form of commitment and the bank is getting out of default. We were not able to achieve that. We were able to set a target to reduce the loan book. As you may have seen from the CFO's presentation, we were successful at doing so, so that we can pay our lenders and support the sector as well. We had some non-core assets that we also disposed of, but we could not dispose enough to meet our target of 400 million. But the plan is to also is to continue to reduce that portfolio of non-core equity assets that the bank holds. We looked at the book and saw that there was a significant amount of underpricing, and we identified a portfolio that qualifies or should have been priced appropriately. We find that some of those loans are long-term, so we can't change them. But in terms of the production facilities that were not priced properly, we were able to identify those and are in motion to make sure that we price appropriately for the land bank portfolio. So those we were able to achieve, and the new pricing model has now been approved. We are now working on implementing it as part of the bank's processes going forward. And together with the methodology that has been done. In terms of the SLA improvement plan, this is a plan following some of the key deficiencies that were identified by the board. An SLA improvement plan was put in place to make sure that we are able to contract better with our co-ops. So for that space, there was a new SLA agreement with the new pricing. We did that in terms of the methodology. In terms of the intermediary accounts transferred to the direct book, you'll see Sadevest and Grow kept there. These have been migrated and have been insourced as part of the land bank book. So we are improving that space. Where we could not agree, obviously, those portfolios are also being insourced. On the next slide. Chair, here we looked at different or diverse revenue streams, just so we just don't depend on interest income, but what is it that we can do to bring more money into the land bank? So we had a partnership banking model that we have been talking about, planning for, and now a draft strategy has been developed. This, obviously, we understand the terrain where we are in now. So at the very least, we just needed to develop the strategy. We couldn't implement it while we're still going through all of these issues. In terms of client value proposition, here we recognize that our clients are important to us, and what is it that we can do for them, what services that they can get from Land Bank, and probably at what speed. You'll note if you've dealt with Land Bank in the past, it's a lot of manual interventions. Just today, the team is working on launching the new client portal where clients of the Land Bank can interact with us on an online basis. So some of these value propositions and recommendations have been drafted and obviously have not been launched, you know, ahead of where we are. Even though we may have a portal, as an example, we're still not accepting new applications, but existing clients can track their portfolios better. There was also the review of the Land Bank Act with recommendations on potential opportunities. If the Land Bank Act is limiting, you know, we had to look at areas where the Land Bank Act can actually be opened up, reviewed. All of that work has been done, at least at an ESCO level. Technological enablement, I've just touched on it. We are working hard at making sure that the bank improves technological capability, its reach, and therefore all of that work is underway, and some of it has been achieved. And today, the customer portal, is going to be experienced by our clients. In terms of organizational capability, we looked at the new model of how to run the bank, and over and above the organizational structure, we needed to look at the operating model. How will this model be rolled out? And the structure, in fact, was discussed in January. It's not March, it's 29 January. But this matter was deferred for another 6 months, given the issues that we were dealing with. We've done the skills audit, and this report has been tabled, and the results are being interacted with. So largely a lot of achievements in this area, insofar as the ESCO was tasked to re-engineer process of the land bank. Next slide. Thank you. So in terms of the non-performing loans, to date we're sitting at about almost 10 billion rands of non-performing loans. We realize that if there's going to be problems, you know, around our ability to collect and be able to meet our obligations, this remains a critical area. So quite a number of solutions have been identified here on how we can make sure that we collect better, we collect faster before these funds get to deteriorate and we lose money on the basis of vandalized properties or properties that have been taken over. So quite a lot of work went into it to look at how we can look at business, not business rescue per se for them, but where there are controls or management issues, how can we get involved? So those are the solutions and some of the accelerated exercises that we can do. And we presented that NPL strategy to the board. We also have insurance businesses, chapters in which we are now integrating well into our applications process. We will not force the clients to take our insurance, but as we originate, we will make sure that we sell our insurance products and we give those businesses a better chance at extending their reach. They are our entities and therefore we must support them. So that strategy is well underway and has been looked at by ESCO and the Land Bank Insurance Board. In terms of reputation, the board has been quite focused on this to make sure that, you know, we build the reputation of the bank. What are the key programs that can make sure that we put out the good stories that we do, the effort that we've put into change, how the land bank has functioned going forward. And therefore, we've got a board-approved reputation management strategic plan, which is going to be implemented going forward. Part of the work, Chair, has been the remedial action plan, where the outcomes of the Auditor General in December, we quickly got on top of them in January and started remediating. We had a national task team that looks at the book as a whole, clean up where we can, improve controls, but that work of insourcing also, you know, was being done by the same team. So a lot of work has been going in to make sure that we remediate, build better internal controls. But there's a lot to fix, Chairperson, and therefore that remediation plan was approved by the board and it's been implemented, and its results or successors will be declared by the Auditor General in the upcoming audit. It will then signal whether we get an unqualified opinion or not. And then the last one there is just the policies that are being reviewed, the collateral management, staging modifications and risk rating. All of that work has, was part of the remedial action plan. So in terms of the stabilization chair, you can see that we're focused not on how many loans have been approved and how did we advance to and what was the profits and so on, but it was really around making sure that the bank is on a stable path, even though it's going through a lot of turbulence at the moment. So that is the stabilization performance scorecard, Chairperson. Thanks. In terms of the conclusion, just to again re-emphasize what I've already touched on, we need to conclude our liability solutions to be able to restart the building process of the bank. The operating model will be impacted, you know, by the conditions that will come with the liability solution. I spoke about the two divisions that will come out as part of this solution. Lenders are now a lot more involved, obviously, in the sell down of the corporate book, and we are rebuilding in terms of transformation and development. So we will be winding down the corporate and commercial business to the ideal split in the next couple of years. And the development and transformation business is our growth trajectory going forward. So that is how we interpreted the request of the committee and have prepared a little bit more than just performance in the two quarters, but to bring the committee up to speed with the activities that have been taking place. I'll hand over to Mr. Moloto, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be brief. I just wanted to give the committee the assurance that the board, Land Bank Board, is alive to the challenges that are faced by the Land Bank. To the extent that the board has constituted a restructuring committee, which is made up of all consisting of all board members, it meets every Monday morning to give guidance to management and the advisors on the negotiations with the lenders, and we receive feedback from the advisors and the lenders and craft an appropriate strategy for such negotiations. The audit committee of the Land Bank Board also meets fortnightly to consider reports from management on the implementation of the remedial plan. So I just wanted to assure the committee that the board is not distant from these challenges, that it is fully engaged in trying to find solution to the challenges that are faced by the Land Bank. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Over then to members, whose hands are up. I see Dennis, Fani. Okay, for now. Okay, Dennis, go for it.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Not a very good story, unfortunately. And I've got quite a few questions, Chair, if you'll indulge me. I think that
You know what, some of our members are not here. They caught up in the NCOP. So we've got time. So you go right ahead.
Thanks very much, Eunice. Good. Chair, right, so we've got a situation where the last time the Land Bank was here, we urged them to go back and reconsider their model and decide if they wanted to be a commercial institution, a DFI, or a hybrid. And I think that answer is quite clear today. The problem that I'm seeing with it is that it's quite clear and evident from the presentation that's been given that the best way for the Land Bank to survive going forward is with the support of the shareholder, so government. So bailouts is essentially what we're talking about, or increased funding. So the problem with that is that I sit with the budget document, and of course, the way the video is shared now, we can't see it. But sitting with the document in front of me, you know, it's quite clear that government is not intending to put additional funding into the land bank over the medium term. So there's a disconnect. You know, it's a case of we need more money, but there isn't more money to be given, and it's not planned for. So perhaps we can get an indication. You know, certainly it would be nice if Treasury was here to tell us, but in their absence, Mr. Maloto, Mr. Kanana, one of you should please tell us, you know, what has been the indications of Treasury in terms of funding this going forward? Because, you know, it's quite clear. You've got a profitable section, which you say you're winding down, and the side that kind of is unsustainable without support is the side that we're going to continue with. Fair enough, you know, as a DFI, that's exactly the way things should happen. But it's very obvious that the funding going forward needs to be well nailed down, well sorted out, in order to continue. So, yeah, you know, and especially with an audit disclaimer, it's going to be difficult for you to find funding from anywhere else other than the shareholder, you know, unless there's some very generous people out there. With an audit disclaimer, I think it disables you quite substantially. And that audit disclaimer is the next thing that I want to pick on, because, you know, when you say that it's caused by unreliable data, in terms of the AG's explanation, you know, unreliable data was one of the key issues that was noted. Credit controls, you know, that have failed, and 50% of loans being granted to intermediaries. Now, when I hear that, I start to get fairly concerned. So my question is, what are the arrangements with these intermediaries? Did the land bank pay them a commission? Did they take a portion of the advance that was intended to go to the beneficiaries? You know, did they take their cut out of that? If you can just explain that comment to me, because, you know, using intermediaries is certainly undesirable for a DFI as far as I'm concerned, because that money should be very carefully looked after. Then I have a question around the default, some of the detail around the default. So you say you're currently in default. Who do we owe the money to? And what are they busy doing? What noises are they making? How much trouble are we in? Is there legal action pending? Is it a fairly pleasant discussion that's happening, or is there some nastiness coming further down the road? And specifically, I mean, I'm talking about bailout. So you know, what are the questions that we're going to have to be asking going forward? The points, I've made another note here, sorry, duplicating my notes, that Treasury's commitment is declining in the medium term. I've noted the further 2.8 billion rand loss in the financial year under audit, concerning. And again, going back to the audit disclaimer, you know, you make the point yourself that the AG has been warning for 2 years that this disclaimer has been coming. You know, if you've had 2 years warning and you haven't managed to tighten up your systems, and in fact, they've obviously gotten worse, to precipitate the disclaimer, I think that's quite concerning. And seriously, you know, Mr. Maloto, I think it falls on your lap. What action has the board taken to make sure that, you know, the warnings from the AG, there was a appropriate action from the executive? You know, looking at impairments, the CFO's information, 11% impairments is massive, but non-performing loans are 26.6%. That's a big problem, and it begs the question. Mr. Kanana, you were brought in 2020, in February, I believe. So, you know, you came in after the majority of the damage has been done, and perhaps you can talk openly with us and tell us, you know, what is the nature of some of these advances that bonds are pay shape? And you know, let's be really straight and blunt with each other and say, has the land bank been used as a cow for state capture? You know, is it another VBS type of vehicle where people were helping themselves to money that they had no right to be? And who signed off those poor advances? And what are the consequences being for the bad advances? You know, if they were bad but well-intentioned advances, you know, there's a different set of rules that must apply, but there must still be consequences for whoever's signing them off. And then just in terms of the OPEX, you know, you were celebrating the fact that the OPEX is down, and forgive my percentages, then they were done roughly in my head. So OPEX is down by roughly 26%, but your income is, your interest income is down by more than 55%. So you know, your overhead, what's being done to contain the overhead within the land bank at this stage? I note that there is a senior position that has not been filled. I'm wondering if there's many more. You know, is there at least a moratorium on employment of new staff until such time as you can sort your funding model out and actually nail it down? I really think that we could get maybe perhaps a more frank disclosure of what's happened between 2020 and now. Maybe some anecdotal information just to tell us, you know, are we dealing with something that's viable going forward or not? And it would be wonderful if Treasury could tell us what their level of commitment is to the land bank going forward, because at this stage it's a case of, well, you know, I'm going to ask my mom and dad for some money, but whether they're going to give it to me or not, I don't know.
Thanks, Dennis. Cindy, is there anybody here from the department?
Honorable one.
Yes, sorry, Cindy, can you just reply first, please? Is anybody from the department who deals with the land bank who could respond to the question by Dennis Laufman?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. I see the BDG, ALM, and
I am with UNATI as well, yes.
Yes.
All right, so then you'll respond towards the end. Okay. Right, after the land bank has responded. Although I'm not sure how much you can respond because the question being asked is quite a challenging one, but I'll leave it to you. Ultimately, Dennis, it's really a question to us, you know, because we shape the outcomes of a budget. But, you know, often it's with proposals from the executive. Having said that, but before I go on, there's a Sue Lund here. Sue Lund is from the land bank as well. Is that right, from the board?
Yes, yeah. My sincere apologies.
Now, is Sue, is this the same Sue Lund who was in Pietermaritzburg in the 80s?
Correct.
Oh, so I know Sue for a very long time. I shouldn't say very long time because it'll reveal our ages. But anyway, all right, welcome, Sue. You're still here, I don't know. Anyway, now, can we move on then? It was funny.
Thank you, Chair, thank you for the opportunity. Yes, the thing with land bank is a troublesome one. The previous engagement that we had, one thought that the land bank might be viewed by some as a vending machine for just sending money through. And it's evident that we are now sitting with the baked potatoes, to put it like that. In the previous engagement, it was said that some of the loans that were given to people, there were not any securities signed. Now, I want to know how many of those loans have been defaulted on, and have that been rectified in the meantime? What percentage of historical or conventional customers that the land bank had, the ones that did not leave, honor their payments? What is the estimated loss in revenue per year as a result of paying customers that were asked to leave a bank because the bank cannot service them now as a result of having too little funds? And the way forward, what is the land bank's current total debt? I didn't see that in the slides. Maybe I missed it. And what is the current annual debt service cost? We must look at that as well. And if you say that capital gains from the interest on paying customers will be used to service the debt, where will funding come from to broaden the initial historical customer footprint that will enable money to actually show profit? In other words, people that borrow money, that pay the interest, the profit is then being put over to service the debt. But you get more customers like that, the ones that are being showed away now. Where will funds be coming from to larger that footprint? I just want to go here. In the previous engagements, the figures indicated that the land bank borrow money at a higher rate and provide loans at a lower rate. You said that this was a wrong pricing model. I want to know, what is the total expected loss to be incurred as a result of that, and who's responsible for this? And then when there are non-performing loans, are there any attempts to recoup the funds by means of legal action and or seizures? If yes, to what extent? And if any seizures are expected to take place on state land, how will that be handled? Because in quite a few instances, if I'm not mistaken, this is upcoming farmers that were assisted by both the land bank as well as the development bank, and they do not have the title deeds for the land. Now, the possibility exists that they defaulted on their loans, and how will that money then be recouped? I'll leave it at that for first, Chair. Thank you.
Zolani?
Chair, can you hear me, Chair?
We can hear you certainly, my friend.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Chair, and honorable members. Allow me to first appreciate the presentation by the officials and the management of the land bank. Chairperson, the land bank has a very critical and a strategic role to play in our economy, particularly in the agricultural sector. That being informed by the fact that we've got to address the historical imbalances. So there's no question about it that this bank must continue to exist. But what is required of it is that it must really play a leading role in terms of the transformation of the agricultural sector in our country. Now, I am very much a protagonist of the rural development, particularly the communal land. So this bank has had a long history of having assisted, in particular, the white commercial farmers with not only loans, but also with subsidies to ensure that they perform above average and ensure that they deliver what is expected of them in ensuring food security of the white South Africa then. But I think that they continue to play that role to assist the commercial farmers, not only white in the context of the new dispensation, but also the African and up and coming farmers. I would love to get those details as to what extent have they transformed, to what extent have they invested in terms of ensuring that they create that much needed balance insofar as the support of the African farmers. And then secondly, you know, I think the bank must acknowledge that we are predominantly a rural country. So from a point of view of planning, there has to be that acknowledgement so that our plans are informed by a reality on the ground. There is no way that we can only plan around issues of funding and financing only for commercial farmers. We need to come up with an intervention of actually being creative on how we can begin even to monetize what we see in the landscape of the rural communities under the tenure system of communal land in particular. There must be an appreciation that currently we've got diverse tenure systems, and one of those is the communal one, which has been for a long period of time left in the margins of our society as if it is a dead economy. The notion of a dead economy, I think it needs to be dismissed in a new dispensation, and we begin to invest in that party and take a strategic decision to say that even if we will just maintain the threshold in terms of the money that we spend there without necessarily getting any profit, as it were, it is an area that needs the focused attention insofar as the land bank is concerned, because that is the only pieces of land that are completely under the stewardship of the majority of South Africans in terms of ownership. I know it's communally owned, and common ownership at this in this context is a very lucrative space for the land bank to look at, and really I think it will give a different picture when we look 5 years from now if the land bank can seriously look into that space. You know, Chair, if you look in terms of the livestock in South Africa, the bulk of the land of the livestock sits in communal areas. So what is needed from an institution like the land bank is to look at that and see an opportunity of that. How do we turn that heritage livestock and begin to monetize it in a manner that will also benefit the bank, but more importantly, will benefit our communities. I would like to see a different way of application when it comes to our approach to the new trajectory of ensuring that we realize a transformed and a total emancipated agricultural space and a rural development space in our country. That will be my contribution, Chair. Otherwise, I am happy with the overall, in spite of the fact that the bank is making losses here and there, but I think that they have the capacity to turn the corner there. If it needs be, we will authorize the issue of putting more resources or at least support the ideal on the part of the executive to put more resources, to avail those resources to the bank itself so that it can do what we expect it to do, particularly the areas that I have touched on. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Zolani. I don't have much to say. Firstly, obviously, I think the role of the land bank is indispensable. There shouldn't be any question in my view. Well, people can question it, obviously, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, not having a land bank would be a disaster, even if having the land bank is not turning out by any means to be a great asset for all the reasons we are familiar with, and it doesn't necessarily affect on the current chair, obviously, and the board, no, indeed, on the CEO and management. Secondly, I realize that you're reporting on a very specific period in your life. It's trying to stabilize and so on. So the goals you set are very limited. But it is quite striking, Chairperson Moloto, that there are a lot of green, there's a lot of green coloring in the key performance areas and achievements there, which obviously one gets cautious about, if not a bit suspicious about, and one wonders whether it's because the achievements you're seeking to secure are so limited, so you know your achievements are easy to fulfill, your targets are easy to fulfill. I'm not absolutely sure about that, but I'm interested in reply to that. The third question I wanted to ask is, what exactly, how do you relate to the land, to the development bank in particular? How does the land bank relate to the development bank? And what level of cooperation is there, if any, on projects that you do or fund and so on? Now, given that we are on the cusp of major land reform, not least with the parliamentary committees, ad hoc committee preoccupied with constitutional amendments, and also the expropriation bill before Parliament. And one can sense some of the things you're saying are relevant in this regard, but is there some sort of more explicit answer you can give? What will become the role of the land bank? In other words, isn't your role going to be enhanced if the land reform process is ramped up? And then finally, as for your question as to Dennis, as to what is National Treasury proposing in terms of support for the land bank? The land bank itself says, and we know, that it's dependent quite substantially on the state sector rescuing, the national budget rescuing it. And where's the money? Because there are so many other claims, competing claims for that limited resource we have in the budget. Where national, it's a difficult question to answer for officials. It's something maybe easier the DG and or the minister could offer an answer to, but I'm not like protecting national treasury. I'm just saying it is a difficult one. And in the replies we'll get from national treasury shortly, we need to take that into account. But at the same time, my own view is that for what it's worth, remember that I can't National Treasury dictate to people what they want to ask and they have a right to ask questions. But I think in fairness, I'm trying to complement or supplement or give some, I don't know what I'm doing exactly, but what I'm saying is, look, even though you can't obviously give rands and cents, you can at least give some sense of your trajectory as National Treasury. In a broad sense, without, if you can give rands and cents, if there were possible, fine, but as close as you can get to that, what is your sense of how much of support you can give, not just in terms of money, but other support to strengthen the land bank over the next few years? And what are like the preconditions you have to give them more support? So in other words, obviously you can't fling money at anybody, even an organization as important as the land bank, right? But often you say, okay, so if you achieve these three out of your 10 targets, we will give you more money. Then you achieve another two, we'll give you more money. And if you achieve another two and so on. So it's like an incremental allocation of resources based on incremental improvements in performance. How does National Treasury see it? Because you have immediate oversight and a more oversight over the land bank. And we just meet the land bank once or twice a year. So I'm trying to expand, if you like, Dennis's question, although he has a right to the answer to his specific question. Thank you. Is there anybody else whose hand is up? Any of the staff members want to raise anything? PBO? Yeah, okay, over then to firstly, Mr. Maloto and your team, and then secondly to National Treasury. Shall we go for it?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I've taken note of the questions that have been posed by members, and I'll allocate to my team. Let's deal firstly with the question around disclaimer. The member, Honorable Dennis Drahada, posed questions around the reliability of data. I would want the Farage Stirling, who is the executive responsible for post-investment monitoring, just to give a bit of history to what transpired with the findings of the Auditor General. And I'll also ask the chairperson of the Audit Committee, Matan Makgato, to speak about the control environment, because it's one of the questions that has been posed by Honorable Ryder on the control environment. Then the second set of questions that was posed by the Honorable Ryder was around the NPLs. I'll also ask Mr. Stichling just to give a bit of history. Honorable Ryder has made some assertion that expressed concerns whether these NPLs were not a consequence of state capture. And how do I want to outright indicate that the NPLs were occurring across the direct book and the indirect book. And I'll ask Mr. Stifling, just to give us a picture of those NTOs, what transpired beyond the numbers, just to, it's not an assertion, it's a question, sorry, my apologies. The history around the NTOs, and I'll ask Mr. Ayanda, the CEO, to speak also on the NPL management strategy. On the issue of OPEX, it was, I can't recall the other one, remember who asked that question. I would ask the CFO to speak about the containing of costs, because the issue is about what have we done to contain costs. And I'll also ask the division chairperson, who happens to be the chairperson of the HR committee, to speak about the operating model, the fit for purpose organization. We'll move to the next questions, Chair, would be around security management, whether we have perfected any of our security. I will ask the Farid to speak about security management and whether we have perfected any security. The other set of questions around our total debt and debt service costs, I'll ask the CFOs to speak to that. The repricing of our loans, I'll ask the CEO to respond to that question. The question whether we have been raising money at high rates and charging clients very low interest rates, I'll ask the CEO to speak to that. On the DBSA question, I'll also ask the CEO to provide a response to that question. And the other question from Honorable Nkiva is with regards to support for rural areas, particularly ensuring that we utilize communal land. I would ask the Mr. Ayanda to provide a response on our approach towards land that is held in rural areas. I hope, Chairperson, I've managed to cover most of the questions, and we'll come to your question, Chairperson. I'll respond to the question why are there so many greens and yet the land bank is facing challenges, and I'll lastly speak to the one on the expropriation bill and our approach to the expropriation. I hope I've not missed any questions. I've attempted to take notes on all the questions that have been posed by honourable members. So I'll ask them to start in that order. But on the disclaimer, I would request that Farid provide some history and colour to what really occurred, and ask the chairperson of the audit committee to speak on the controlled environment in the land.
Okay, thank you, Arthur. In fact, if you haven't responded to all the questions, as you know, members will come back and say, excuse me, but this question is an answer and so on. So they will be quite capable of you. They can do that. It's fine. I think you covered almost all of them, if not all of them. Secondly, I don't want to keep saying, okay, next. You know the order and sequence, and your chairperson of the board will facilitate. So please go ahead, right, as recommended by Mr. Moloto.
Good afternoon, honourable members, and good afternoon to the Land Bank colleagues. My name is Farid Stefan. I'm the executive responsible for...
Farid, could you... we can't see your face, we can fully... I don't care about these things, but I have to abide by the norms here. What matters is what you're going to say. Does it really matter whether we see you for it or not? Not to me. But the broadcasting people get cheated off with us if we don't tell you that. So I'm just doing my job, right? Now we seem to... Yeah, there you are. We can see you now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And thanks for the opportunity. Pertaining to the first question, as it relates to the Auditor General's findings with regards to the lack of control environment, as it pertains to the service level partners that we do business with. So just to contextualize, Chair, The bank has both a direct portfolio and an indirect portfolio. The indirect portfolio is made up of close to plus minus, historically it's been 6 to 7 SLA partners. These SLA partners were contracted to perform intermediary services to the bank, and for that particular services, they were provided with a remuneration structure where whatever margins we made on the disintermediation of funds, they would receive a fixed fee as well as a margin share on the disintermediation of those funds, and they would share appropriately for the risk of the portfolio that was originated on behalf of the bank. Now, the way those contracts were consummated back late as 2010, it was structured in such a way that those particular intermediaries were contracted to perform these services under the auspices of their own infrastructure, meaning that they had to invest in infrastructure to originate loans, to manage loans, to monitor loans, and to manage the portfolio of non-performing loans to the extent where those loans, if they had to deteriorate to the point of their debts to be written off, they were also responsible for that entire process. So the end-to-end value chain management of the portfolio from origination right down to bear debts being written off and post-bear debt recovery processes. Now, it's quite important that that context is provided here for the following reasons. That particular contract enabled the bank to hold the intermediary liable for the management of those functions. And the intermediary, in return, had to make sure that they have the requisite infrastructure from both the people, process, systems, as well as governance processes in place to effect that particular service provision. So providing pre-support to farmers, post-support to farmers, and managing the loans that's associated with that particular disintermediation process. So for the last close to 5 to 7 years, those particular functions were performed under the auspices of a signed agreement between the land bank and the intermediary, and under that, with the understanding that those governance controls and protocols and systems were at the purview of the intermediary. And when the Auditor General steps in, from an audit perspective, they were expected to audit those particular processes in accordance with the signed agreements and the prevailing credit policies that were sanctioned and adopted between the land bank and the intermediary. So for the last couple of years, those particular processes, the protocols around systems, policies, procedures, and infrastructure were found to be adequate and were found to be in compliance with the sanction agreements in place and the sanction credit policies in place. Now, for the last 3 years, when the AG stepped into the bank to review those particular process protocols, the AG also found in 2018 and 2019 that those particular SLA counterparties performed the services, again, in accordance with the signed agreements
and are we losing you?
We'll have to ask him
some sequence. He's coming back.
Excuse me,
Murray, we lost him together for about a minute and a half. Can you repeat what you said, please?
So, Chair, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Yeah.
So I don't know where you lost me. I'm going to go back to the point where I made reference to the last 3 years.
Good. That's fine.
So in the last 3 years, in 2018, 2019, and even 2020, so in 2018, the AG, again, did a full review or audit of these particular intermediaries and found that those particular process protocols, system protocols, as well as control environments were adequate. However, the AG did highlight to the bank that they believe that the bank needed to standardize all those processes and systems and credit policy protocols and align it to that of the land bank. Now, bearing in mind at the time, the bank operated on two fronts. It had its own direct portfolio and then the SLA or intermediary portfolio. The SLA portfolio operated on their own protocols as compared to the protocols embedded for the direct portfolio. So that's where the difference in the main arose to. So the AG found that those differences, it was important to try and strike alignment of those differences, align the credit policies, align the operating environments, align the audit frameworks, and make sure that the bank ensure that the SLAs comply to the latest provisions, accounting provisions, in as far as what the bank has adopted. Now, it's critical that it's clear that the bank adopted IFRS 9 between 2016 and 2017. However, IFRS 9 was not adopted by the SLAs and not rolled out to the extent where it was supposed to, giving rise again to these differences. However, based on their own protocols, the AG found that particular service provision rendered under their own protocols were adequate, with the highlight or emphasis being placed that there are substantial differences in the way the bank manages its direct portfolio versus that of the SLAs. And therein lies the observation being made by the AG's latest finding in 2020, where the AG believes that those particular differences became elevated and those particular differences became material as far as risk to the bank, and the AG then issued a disclaimer to the bank indicating that the bank needed to remediate those particular differences quite extensively to make sure there's full alignment with the operating protocols of the bank. And that inadvertently answers the first question being posed, why the observation was made around a lack of control environment, a lack of adequate controls around processes, policies, procedures, and compliance to accounting standard protocols. So do apologize for the long-winded approach to each here, but it contextualized the issues currently in front of the bank to be remediated. Now, based on those particular AG findings, the bank embarked on the what we call the SLA improvement plan that was sanctioned by the board, because the executive and the board identified these particular concerns as early as January of 2019, before the AG raised these concerns to be alarming. And we put afoot the SLA improvement plan to remediate all of those particular challenges. What's critical, though, Chair, is to bear in mind the bank had contractual agreements in place with these SLA partners and couldn't make unilateral changes to those particular environments of the SLA without reaching consensus with the individual SLA counterparties. So we tried to a contractual renegotiation process to make these changes in the operating environments of the different SLAs. And when we found to be close to impossible, because it became quite costly for the SLA partners to make these changes, and they resisted, the bank then adopted quite a harsh stance to terminate most of the SLA agreements as early as 2019. And in December of 20 of last year, we terminated close to 80% of the SLA portfolios, because they just could not comply to the requirements of the bank as identified by the AG and the board, as well as the executive. So we went quite to the extreme of making sure that we make the necessary changes to comply to the standards required by the AG and by the gaps identified by the board and the executive chief. So that clarifies the first question, And through your permission, Chair, I would gladly move on to the question as it relates to the NPLs, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not going to keep interrupting and saying thank you, next, and so on. Just let it flow.
So the question being posed around NPLs and observation made by one of the honourable members, whether or not NPLs can be related to misappropriation of funds within the bank or to the more severe extent where funds rooted out of the bank. I think to understand how the NPLs manifest within a portfolio. So as indicated before, we have two portfolios, the direct portfolio and the indirect portfolio. Now, for both the direct and indirect portfolio, we do have compliance processes and governance processes in place where we originate clients, that is new clients or new entrants to the market that chooses to take up facilities with the bank. There's clear protocols in terms of how we originate transactions. So there's a clear delineation of responsibilities and what we call the three lines of defense within the bank, where we separate duties in accordance with clearly defined policies, processes, and delegated levels of authority. So our front-end bankers, with the support of front-end business analysts and front-end agricultural economists, would support any potential farmer that wishes to enter the market in compiling their particular credit application. That credit application, with its supporting documentation, would then be compiled with a clear motivation around that farming enterprise's ability to afford the debt that it's applying for. Once that particular transaction is consummated at an origination space, that particular transaction, what is supporting information, is then dispatched to a centralized credit origination environment within the bank, which is the second line of defense for the bank, which is our credit environment. So our bankers originate the transaction, they parcel and they package the transaction, they test the debt service ability of that particular counterparty, they assess the collateral that supports that transaction, and they make sure that the underlying farming enterprise from both a commodity and a regional footprint perspective can in fact operate in a sound and effective manner to repay the loan. Once the transaction is packaged in accordance with all the governance processes and protocols, that transaction is then sanctioned and passed on to the second line, our credit environment, who test all the assumptions in that particular business case and test whether or not the transaction is originated in a sound manner. And once all those tests have been conducted and the credit team feels this particular client and the transaction is up to standard or masters the standard, that particular transaction is, based on its size, presented at the different credit adjudication committees of the bank. Now, the bank is is organized in a manner that differentiates or stratifies the size of transactions and passes those particular size of transactions to specific credit committees. So as an example, transactions ranging from 0 to 10 million will go to a specific credit committee, 10 to 20 million to another committee, and so on and so forth. So where it's sizable transactions, as an example, that ranges between 20 and 250 million, it will serve on the bank's credit risk management committee that is made up of different specialists representing different disciplines in the bank, as well as specialists representing different commodities and specialists managing risk. And the entire executive serves on that committee to make sure that that transaction is properly adjudicated, to make sure that we approve or decline the transaction based on the packaging and the master of that transaction. Anything beyond 250 million, as an example, will go to a subcommittee of the board, where board members, a subcommittee of the board members serve on those particular transactions to make sure that they adjudicate and provide guidance in the form of either approval or decline decision. And anything above a billion rand, the approval or sanction is adopted by the board. So it's important that that delegated authority levels are clearly defined and the separation of duties are clearly defined, as well as the different lines of defense. So a transaction passes that particular adjudication master to make sure that when we approve it, based on the information submitted, that particular transaction has the debt service capacity and ability to service the underlying commitments in the short, medium, or long term. As it relates to NPLs, when a client fails to honor his payment, whether it's a biannual payment or an annual payment, that particular customer will then cycle delinquent, meaning he was up to date before, he will then go into his first missed payment based on his contractual obligations, and that particular arrears will then be managed by the Post-Investment Portfolio Management Services Division to make sure, again, the separation of duties so that the team that originated the transaction cannot be the same team that will manage the arrears on that particular transaction. If the client defaults on the second payment, we take, so we manage the full suite of arrears from missing first payments, second payments, and third payments. Now, a first payment default is when a client moves into underperforming, and a second payment default, which is 90 days in arrears, moves into NPL. Those NPLs are then managed on an accelerated basis. So we try through our soft interventions to get the client to pay. If the client fails to pay, we move into hard collections where we try and threaten with legal action. We try to restructure where we can. We try to advance what we call capital or interest moratoriums, or we defer payments if that will solve the particular indebtedness. If that cannot prove to be the case, we quickly accelerate into the legal environment, where the legal processes unfold from intention to summons, judgment, attachment, and from an attachment, we sell the underlying assets to recover whatever we can in the interest of the bank. So we do attach properties, we do make sure that we recover against the assets, and we do take properties to auction. In that process, we work with both our internal legal team, as well as outsourced legal firms to make sure we perfect the collateral and recover the outstanding debt. So coming back within that context, Chair, coming back to the question posed, has any of the funds of the bank been misappropriated based on these rising NPLs? I can say with my hand on my heart, certainly not. Has any funds been mismanaged? Also, definitely not. We only sitting with rising NPLs as a result of either prevailing poor agricultural conditions as it relates to drought, persistent drought, famine, disease, or based on economic difficult situations occasioned by the likes of COVID, or rising interest rates or inflation, where people find themselves or underlying farming enterprises find themselves in a situation where they cannot service their commitments. And when that happens, we bring to bear on those particular defaulted transactions the process protocols of collections to the point of affecting security, to the point of recovering against outstanding debt, and to the point of listing defaulters for non-payment, obtaining judgments, and those judgments typically stay up to 25 years, so that we make sure that we recover whatever funds we can against defaulting debtors or farmers. So I choose to stop there, Chair, and take any questions that might emanate from that discussion. description. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I'll ask the CEO, Ayankata Kanana, to deal with the NPL management strategy and the repricing of loans, and deal with the question on the DBSA also.
Thank you, Chair. So we spent a bit of time, one of the quarters in the previous financial year, basically trying to understand the root causes. Why are NPLs so high? And the intention there was to make sure that we come up with a response to be able to at least keep this number low. Part of it, and you know, for the sake of the organizations involved, I won't mention names, but we look at how are these farmers managing this their farms in particular. Most of these will be family run, and most expenses are catered from the farm itself. And you would find that, you know, the decision between business and personal expenses sometimes does get blurred. And you want an organization that will come in, restructure, put governances in place, put management in place, and put accountability processes in place. So we found that there's a need to possibly deal with those type of situations. We found that as part of the bank's SLA improvement process, particularly, there were loans that were issued probably a loan on a loan which should not have been issued, but you know, the client had a production facility, and instead of paying it within the one financial year or the one calendar year, the loan was rolled and then a readvancement was made. And you find that mostly when we sign off these disposals after judgments or auctions, the debt is fairly high, but the market value and the for sale value that we have to implement against are very, very low. So there was a lot of thinking that went into how then do we make sure that the bank does not suffer losses as a result of these sales or disposals just to make just to get rid of that particular farm. We were not very keen, and I think as and when myself and the CFO have to sign off on these loans that we are writing off, our conscience is not clear when we have to just sign to get rid of the client. So we then needed to look at what are the things that we can do to make sure that we turn around this NPL process. So part of it was to have a packaged program where we go in and look at the client and say, how can we assist? What are the levers that are available to you? Is it an issue of a drought, or is it an issue of just pure mismanagement in terms of the funds that you have received? So that process is underway. We also owe the board a business case around property management. We have not delivered that yet. What this means, Chair, is that the land bank, and so the name must be followed or says, it must be able to take some of these loans and look at, not loans, farms, and put them in its balance sheet and look after them, either to sell them at a later date or make them available for lease. But for us to take that step, we need to spend money to set up those processes so that we are able to take the farms wherever it is, even if it's in Waterville, to be able to secure it from further vandalism. And the issue with some of the NPLs, we found that they stay quite long in the legal system, and judgments take too long to come through. So by the time you have to claim against that particular farm or its security, a lot has deteriorated, loose tools are no longer there. Then there were issues of back to basics, meaning land bank staff must do what they must do, i.e. phone the client, pressure them to pay, be on their door and demand that they make good what is due to the land bank. So part of that, you know, is stuff that we don't need to, we don't need new money, we don't need to do new things, we just need to do our work and make sure that we are able to prevent these NPLs from even arising or staying longer in that particular system. So we are working with the team around the NPLs to make sure that they are reduced, they are managed. In the last quarter, we saw a lot of roll-ins into non-performing loans, and we saw a lot of cures where our systems are able to assist the client in particular to restructure their debt where necessary and prevent them from going into NPL. So there have been proactive strategies that we are considering to make sure that these funds flow back to the bank, the 9.9 billion rand. There was a question around the land, the usage of the land. This question is quite important. I think when I started with the land bank, it's one of the areas I tackled because I had an expectation that in order for you to go and pay for a 1,000-hectare farm and buy it, that on its own is going to cripple any new entrant. Now, paying for that particular farm and then also having to fund the production inputs immediately renders the farmer unsustainable and is likely to get into a defaulting situation. So when you talk about the land that is available in the system, we must be able to use this land without necessarily having to buy it. And if communal land is available for such, communal land can actually be used productively and profitably to make sure that agriculture sustains that particular community. You know, other communities are able to leverage off this, and I won't get into the specifics, but we should be able to roll out these type of programs countrywide. So we have debated it, but the issue of land becomes a tricky one, and at times not within the land bank control, at least today. But insofar as land is being leveraged to make sure that it delivers sustainable agriculture, we must do so. The Department of Agriculture, including some municipalities, also rolled out a program where they lease land to communities. Those very communities come back to the land bank to ask for finance to work those particular pieces of ground. So there is a need for us to be able to respond to those particular programs. And yes, to the honourable member, the honourable member Zolani, we want to bring the strategy further down from the framework to what is implementable. But we are obviously appreciative of the space that we are in, and we can only at least give you a framework today. And with the support that this committee may give and the resources that are deployed, we will then be able to support the sector, the communal or rural communities in making sure that they prosper in agriculture.
DBSA.
Sorry?
I said DBSA. Don't forget DBSA.
DBSA.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just help me with the question? I missed that.
The question from the honourable member is what collaboration do we have with the DBSA? I would assume it's around infrastructure development, whether there's any partnership between us and the DBSA Development Bank.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Chair, I'm not aware of any particular collaboration with the DBSA, at least insofar as you know, my time with the land bank. But there are collaborations that may not necessarily be signed off. For example, we were aware that our liquidity situation is going to cause us problems. We immediately contacted particularly the IDC, who have been quite helpful in making sure that the sector does receive support. But we haven't done anything in particular with DBSA. Maybe members of the EXCO who have been there before me can assist, but there isn't one at this point that I'm aware of. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Kansani, may you deal with the OPEX, the total debt, the debt service costs, and initiatives to manage that OPEX. And the deputy chairperson would deal with the fit-for-purpose organization and some preliminary thoughts on the operating model, though it has not yet been finalized.
Thank you, Chair. So on the question of the OPEX, Chair, it's a tricky one. If you look at land bank costs, about 60% of that is actually staff salaries. So we've got a huge piece that sits with the people, with the people side. Also, I think it essentially is a fine balance between keeping the bank operational, so not breaking the bank, and reducing the cost. And the reason I'm saying this, Chair, is if you look at land bank, and I think that's why we have so many people, land bank, our processes are extremely manual. And normally where you have manual processes, you tend to compensate for that through people. So there is work that is currently underway, Chair. From a containment perspective, we have as an example, a moratorium on filling of vacancies, and there's a very strict process that we follow. As an example, all vacancies that are filled have to be signed off by the CEO, and that's in an attempt to manage this cost. Also, we first look internally to make sure that we don't go external before exhausting the internal piece as far as vacancies are concerned, and also looking at where, as an example, some colleagues might be able to absorb some components of whatever is required. So there's a whole process that we run around that space. We also, on the other operating expenses, they are watched and managed very closely to make sure that land bank only spends what it absolutely has to, Chair. The other pieces maybe that I need to mention is that there's also, I think, a bit of a challenge in that. So we mentioned that we are insourcing currently. We also are building our IT system. So to try and automate, and I think the CEO in his presentation alluded to that. So the process that we're undertaking currently, and I think when the deputy chairperson comes in, she will on the operating model, she will talk to that. It's basically to say over the next 5-year horizon, what do our costs look like? So there are steps that we've taken to manage costs in the immediate, and then looking ahead as well to say what does it look like in line with where the bank is going. I don't know, Chair, if that addresses the question. And then on the current total debt, as at end of March 2021, the funding liabilities were sitting at 35.9 billion. That was after Land Bank was able to repay about 5 billion of the debt. The funding cost or the cost of servicing the debt, if you look at the 2021 numbers, it's actually around 3 billion, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you give it, Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Malodo, Chair of Board, and Chairperson Karim. I've been asked to speak to the operating model, the fit-for-purpose organizational structure, but also our ability to contain costs.
Firstly, I just need to indicate that the business operating model has to be informed by the strategy and vision of the organization. At this point in time, the Land Bank has crafted what we call Vision 2025, where the bank aims to support development and transformation in earnest. And secondly, the Land Bank has got a broader mandate to support the agri sector as a whole so that food security is ensured. As much as the board is intent on containing costs, two very important issues still need to be resolved. Whilst the CEO was presenting earlier on, and I think the CFO was presenting, it became very clear, Chairperson Karim and members, that the liability solution still needs to be agreed upon with the lenders. And secondly, the second piece that I think is important in our consideration as to how to reorganize the organization and try to contain costs is the issue of the insourcing of the SLA books. Having said that, Chairperson, the Land Bank is in the process of insourcing 4 of the 6 SLA books. In view of the insourcing model that we have embarked upon, it means that more resources within the Land Bank are now required in order to handle the insourced books of the SLAs. At the moment, Chairperson, we are busy with the insourcing of the 2 huge books, the Obaro as well as the Unibro books. That process is currently underway. We therefore believe that it would be inappropriate to start the rationalizing and the reorganizing process whilst these activities are taking place. When we last met with the committee in October 2020, we spoke about the Land Bank Vision 25, which is the overarching strategy of the bank that is underpinned by the liability solution and the bigger thrust of the bank to drive development and transformation. As we heard earlier, the liability solution is yet to be finalized. And because it's the biggest underpin to what and how Land Bank becomes in the next 5 years and way into the future, we believe that it's one of the biggest dependencies that we need to take into consideration before we reorganize ourselves. However, in the meantime, Chairperson Karim and members, the bank has ensured that it contains costs by not filling positions that have not been categorized as essential and or critical. The bank has not been able to pay short-term bonuses nor annual salary increases in the last few years. And that includes the fees of the directors as well, where vacancies had arisen due to natural attrition. Management has been able to reorganize and reallocate work and ensure that the organization is able to continue into the future. So therefore, colleagues, I'm just confirming that the board is very keen in making sure that we are able to contain costs and that we do have a fit-for-purpose organizational structure going forward, one that supports the vision that we have for the future of the Land Bank. However, at this point in time, I think we do have key dependencies, and one of them is the liability solution, the finalization thereof, but also the fact that we're still busy with insourcing the books of the SLAs, and we believe that we're going to require huge resources. So what we are intent on doing in the short term is making sure that we do not lose the critical skills. We're trying to hold on to them so that we do not go and insource them from the market at a higher cost. At this point in time, we're just trying to do with what we've got. Thank you, Chair. Let me stop at this point.
Thank you. I'll ask Sydney Sandy, the Executive for Strategy, to deal with the questions that have been posed by the Chairperson of the Committee, Honourable Karim. The first question is whether the goals that you have set look to be limited. There are a lot of greens and few reds, but yet the organisation is facing major challenges. And the second question is around the expropriation bill, the land reform process, What's our approach? I'll ask Sydney to deal with that question. And lastly, I'll ask Matane Makgato, the chairperson of the audit committee, to speak to the control environment in the land bank, and then we should hand over to the chairperson of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, members. So, Chair, if you look at slide 24 of our presentation, which deals with the financial performance of the bank, you will see there that if we had colors, those colors would be red. So I'm starting there because the context I want to paint is that there was already an appreciation when the compact was signed with the shareholder that given that there was no solution reached as yet to get us out of default and to be able to get into normal business operations, that the financial performance of the bank was going to suffer. So that appreciation was already there from the beginning. What was critical for the board as well as the shareholder was that during this time, as we try and get the solution into place, we need to ensure that the bank's other operations are appropriately stabilized so that when the opportunity to turn around comes, the fundamentals are still in place. So the scorecard, as you see, is largely driven by that need for stabilization and to do things that prepare us and make us at least ready for the time when the potential turnaround would come. So you'll see that it deals with issues of ensuring that the right pricing is in place, reducing the book as it would be expected that the proceeds thereof would go into repayment of the liability solution, looking for partnerships that are useful in future to leverage third-party funding, as well as ensure that private sector participation is brought to bear to support the sector. So that's essentially why you will see that the element in that scorecard deals with those issues. Financial performance-wise, we are in a significant negative trajectory. You will see at the slide that I referred to that given that we are not supporting the sector, the book has obviously been shrinking. Besides the book shrinking, there's also an impact on margins because the debt that we're running is expensive and we are not getting into new transactions where we will price at appropriate pricing and therefore ensure that the margins are managed. You'll also see, as an honorable member has observed, that our NPLs are sticky at very high levels of 26. So the financial performance is troublesome. In the last financial year, as the CEO indicated, we posted a loss of 2.8 billion. We're projecting, as the CFO has indicated, unaudited as it is for now, 1 billion rand loss. So I think you need to juxtapose the scorecard that you see in relation to the financial performance of the organization. The two objectives were different but complementary, as it were. Coming back to the issue of land, I think one must appreciate that a good land reform process will have benefits for the economy in general, and that includes all of us, the land bank included. We have been party to the negotiations and or participation in the panel of advisors relating to land reform. So we put as an organization a closer interest and contribution. Without going into the specifics of expropriation, I think one must just look at it at the broad strategic level, that any reform program that provides more accessibility to productive land is going to be welcome, and the land bank welcomes such. We are also cognizant that in terms of the way the process is being handled very responsibly by all the committees that are engaged in this process, there's an appreciation from as far as we can see that the rights of creditors are being respected, because that is the one part where financial institutions, including land bank, if the rights of creditors in terms of collateral held through these properties were to be compromised, it would obviously compromise the value of what we've invested in. So to the extent that the land reform process, irrespective of whether it's through ownership or through the extent of tenure that beneficiaries get, for as long as the issue of security of tenure is addressed, financial institutions like ourselves will welcome that, because if we know, for example, taking a lease approach as an example in point, if that lease agreement is for a longer period of time, when financial institutions look at investing in projects, they take a view around what it would take in terms of time in tenure to recoup and to have an operation generating income and profitability. So to the extent that the security of tenure is guaranteed, as I say, whether through ownership or through lease arrangements, that would be necessarily supported. However, I think the committee ought also to know that unless there's a proper support system to ensure that beneficiaries are supported to be successful in their operations, that the land reform process will not yield the objectives for which it needs to achieve. So to that extent, it is important that whoever is a beneficiary to the land reform process has appropriate state machinery around support infrastructure. From the point of project preparation to helping the new beneficiaries in terms of their business plans, ensuring that in terms of technical support, extension services, those are provided to beneficiaries. And indeed, from our side, the leveraging of blended finance from financial institutions so that those participants have affordable financing. And in addition, to ensure that market linkages are appropriately brought in so that the produce of these beneficiaries goes into the system and they can manage to generate the income that they require. So I think when we look at the land reform question, it has to be looked at as holistically as I've tried to paint, Chairperson. I will pause here, Chairperson of the Board.
Thank you, Matali. And then we hand over to the Chairperson of the committee, please.
Thank you, Mr. Maloto. Are there any follow-up questions from the members?
The just one question, Chairperson, that has not been answered. I've requested the Chairperson of the Audit Committee of the Board to respond to the control environment. Matanin, please.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I won't be too long. Given the magnitude of the issues that have been raised by the AG, so for FY21, we gave it our as the objective of this year to have improved audit outcomes. And we also realized that if we were to follow your normal audit committee program, it will take about 3 years to fully resolve all of the issues that have been raised. We clearly do not have 3 years. We do not even have a year. So we gave ourselves 6 years to get to a point where we have improved outcomes. So to ensure that the bank's internal controls are improved, we are closely monitoring what the team is doing. And in actual fact, we are providing guidance on a regular basis. And so I'm very happy to report that out of the 55 issues that the AG has raised, 33 of those have been closed and 12 partially resolved. And of those that have been partially resolved, they mainly relate to the standardization of policies relating to the risk rating, collateral management, and the modification as far as the restructuring of the debt of our clients that find themselves in trouble. And the outstanding big ones relate to the recalibration of the models and the valuation of about 1,000 properties that need to be revalued. And on that front as well, we have sourced external support, and the team is busy doing that. So we want to assure the committee that we are doing our level best to ensure that when the FY21 report is tabled, it will hopefully come back with much better outcomes. And just on another point of whether there is state capture or corruption, I just want to confirm to the committee members that there is nothing that has come to the attention of the Audit and Finance Committee and indeed of the board that would make us to think that the problems that we are faced with are largely driven by state capture. We believe that the challenges that we are faced with are just your normal challenges that any other entity, be public or private, will get into. So on that front, I wouldn't want the committee members to worry that much. And we believe that we are making good progress. For FY21, most of the items have been closed. For FY20, I think we are about 60% round about there. The one big item is the opening balances for FY20. Chair, we believe that the committee is doing all that it can to monitor the internal controls with the support of the internal auditors. In actual fact, at the meeting that we held about 2 weeks ago, we were tabled with an internal audit report to give us assurance of the level and the validity of the outcomes that the team is presenting to the committee. So we are comfortable that the report that will be tabled in the next coming few months will be much better. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The National Treasury, do you want to reply to Dennis's or Mr. Ryder's original question about the extent of your support? Yes.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to and also to the DBA, the Land Bank colleagues I was in DBSA earlier on. Apologies, Chair. Chair, I think you tried to assist me in responding to that question, but maybe I can start by outlining a process. Treasury as a department facilitates the budget process for government. It does not unilaterally decide what to support and what not to support. So in the budget process, departments and entities reporting to these departments would provide bids at a provided time. Those bids are then presented to the MTEC committee that is comprising of DGs. Then it moves on to the Minister's Committee on the Budget for still input and consideration. And then it moves to Cabinet and ultimately gets approved, goes through Parliament as well. So that is the process that we undertake. Obviously here Treasury has a responsibility not only of facilitating the budget chair, but also in this case as a chair, as a shareholder department for the land bank. And therefore there are shareholder responsibilities that Treasury would then undertake. It just happens that it also then facilitates the budget. And the assumption that is made is because Treasury is a shareholder, then Treasury can just decide. Treasury is subjected to a process as well, including its entities. And to the point where last year when the land bank challenges came up, Chair, and they required cash to pay some of the lenders who, were guaranteed and could have implication for the broader government guarantee, we were able to, through a budget process, request the 3 billion in a very short period of time, number one. And notwithstanding the fact that we are in a crisis, Chair, and we do have a binding constraint in the form of the budget in terms of having a scarcity in terms of the resources that are available to be deployed to all the objectives of government. So in short, Chair, we do, government has shown commitment to land bank, 3 billion last year. There's commitment for 7 billion over the 3 years. And further, the fact that land bank would have challenges in terms of raising funding going forward, given the, you know, the low confidence as a result of the default, it's something that has been acknowledged and has been raised with the decision makers. Further, that, you know, as the land bank supports development and transformation, that would also come at a certain cost, given the maturity of the emerging farmers and the likely high NPLs that could result from that process. And all that as well with the re-establishment of the development and transformation mandate has been flagged in relation to the kind of funding that would be required for land bank to be sustainable. And I guess, Chair, the question then becomes, given the binding constraints, it becomes the scale and pace at which government supports land bank. And I think in with regard to that, you know, the suit would have to be cut to the cloth that is available, given all the priorities and given all the objectives of government. But I think so far, if it's not demonstration in the middle of the crisis to make 10 billion friends available to the land bank, I'm not sure what would be the commitment for government, especially in a very short period of time. Going forward, there would be other requirements in the medium term, long term, which would then have to support the land bank. And that is why the Minister of Finance is not working alone as a shareholder with the land bank, but he's also brought in the Minister of Agriculture to try and have policy aligning to the kind of land bank that we need, given the importance of agriculture, not only in job creation, but also in food security. So Minister Didiza has been working quite closely with us as well and advising in making sure that the land bank remains sustainable, and the current challenge as we see it is very much dealt with. And in terms of just the non-cash, I know, Chair, you wanted to pin me on the magnitude of the support. Unfortunately, at this point, I cannot provide that. The only magnitude that is spelled out, which, by the way, was informed by the colleagues from the land bank, is what we have in the budget. And as far as the future ones that they would require, would have to then put it through the budget system. And myself and the team work very closely together to make sure that we understand the assumptions, we understand the rationale for the ask, because when we get into the National Treasury space, we become the spokesperson of the land bank and we present on behalf of the land bank in terms of the resources that are required. Chair, I'm sure you've seen that there have been other requests on guarantees. Effectively, a guarantee is an appropriate tool for an entity that is able to repay. If an entity is not able to repay, then a guarantee is not the right tool, because what it then becomes is that funds are provided to entities not in a transparent manner, and also given how the budget process unfolds, it means it also undermines the integrity of the budget, because once that guarantee realizes, it means some monies have to be taken from other priorities of government to deal with the default in terms of these guarantees, because they do have the first claim to the National Revenue Fund. So the way we grant them, we need to be quite careful and have consideration for the impact of these guarantees should they realize. So Land Bank would then have to be going through that budget process and be supported. And as I said, the scale and pace would then differ depending on what is available for government to support. And obviously, Chair, I think it's not something that is hidden that the Land Bank default has had a very deleterious effect, not only on the Land Bank, but also on the SOC portfolio, where others are seeing a rise in terms of their risk premium, but also broadly in terms of the trust and confidence in government to continue supporting these entities, given that most of them actually find themselves in a very dire financial situation, of which the guarantor themselves are also not spared by the crisis, previous crisis, as well as the current crisis that is currently giving us challenges in terms of health and making sure that we are providing the required resources for health support. So, Chair, I would leave it at that and just, you know, maintain that it is a government decision and it is a government commitment. And to the extent that we make these representations to yourself as decision makers, then we are able to be guided and decisions are then made on that basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any follow-ups? I see there are comments here in the chat group. Is Fani Dutoy asking, what is the total expected loss as a result of the wrong pricing model? And then Dennis is asking, as an entity in this department, you must have a strategic direction. I don't know what he's referring to here. Dennis, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here, Chair. Thank you very much. But again, it's probably an unfair question because it's more political. So I think perhaps we need to have a chat with the minister when next he's with us, and maybe get some broad direction from him. As you mentioned earlier, it may be unfair on the administration. But Chair, if I can just make a comment, overall, I think that the presentations today have actually been frank and pleasant and comprehensive, and I want to appreciate that because, you know, we're faced with an entity that's clearly in deep trouble, and yet they've come here, they've made good effort to give accounts, and I want to appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Is Fani still here?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead. What is it you want to know?
As I asked initially, Jay, is the total expected loss of the wrong pricing model? I do not know if I missed it, but I can't recall getting the answer on that. As well as with regards to the seizures of land that belongs to government, how will that be handled? I know that the person that answered mentioned that one doesn't necessarily want to seize land as such, but there are legal processes that are flowing from this. But how will land that belongs to government be handled if the individuals default on their payments?
All right, thank you. Over to your team, Mr. Moloto.
Okay, thank you. Let me just respond to the one of land belonging to government, which is similar in some ways to the situation where, let's say, we get involved in rural land. Our approach and the thinking has been that, for instance, if we actually get involved in rural land where we are provided a long-dated lease agreement, one of the key issues, elements of that lease agreement would have to stipulate step-in rights of the land bank. Because one, as you correctly indicated, on land belonging to government and the community, we can't perfect our security. We can't seize that land and sell it. It's impossible. So you need to have step-in rights. And those step-in rights, in simple terms, would empower us to evict the tenant and demand that the tenant be replaced by a viable business. That's the only security we have in that type of situation, because you cannot, for instance, on lease, as I indicated, on lease, long-dated lease agreement with communal land, you cannot seize communal land. Those are permission to occupy in the first instance. And secondly, it's just political and unmanageable. So I would assume the same will apply to the instance where the land bank gets involved to land that is held by the state. It becomes difficult and repossess that. I mean, to repossess that land or perfect that security and sell it. It becomes quite challenging. So the key issue is how you draft those lease agreements to ensure that the creditor is protected. On the total expected losses and as a consequence of the pricing model, I'm going to ask two people to speak to this matter. One, I would ask Farid just to give us a bit of history, and the reason why I'm referring to him, because he's been longer in the organization, on our pricing model and how we have attempted to ensure that we do not have a mispricing that we're talking about. And I will then refer to the CFO to talk about possible expected losses. Thanks, Chairperson. Let me ask Farid just to be brief on that matter of the repricing.
Thank you, Chair of the Board. How we used to historically price any of our underlying loans, we obviously procure funds through debt and capital markets, and those particular funds are procured or advanced to the bank at what we call a certain cost, the cost of funds. When we disintermediate those funds, we always make sure that we add a margin on top of the cost of funds so that we can recover not only our cost, but also generate profit. Now, historically, we've always managed to disintermediate funds at above the cost of funds with a healthy return for the bank. And that was both in a direct and the indirect portfolio chain. So in the last couple of months, if not the last 2 years, our cost of funds is radically increased, which means the funds that we were locked into certain agreements where we couldn't advance repricing, we were running those particular facilities at a loss. However, in our repricing strategy, we've adopted quite an aggressive stance. When those portfolios became due for repricing, we managed to adjust those prices up in accordance with the latest cost of funds to make sure there's minimal revenue leakage. And our repricing strategy now, for any fund to be disintermediated to the sector, we've developed a repricing model that takes into account the latest changes in the short, medium, or long-term nature of the increasing cost of funds. So should we disintermediate it, whether it's on a short, medium, or long-term basis, it is disintermediated with the right level of margins attached to it so that we have the desired returns. We do have historical portfolios that we now find is underwater or incorrectly priced, but we're busy remediating that and making sure that those particular portfolios are either closed out or refinanced with other institutions and that we mitigate the losses to the bank. Thank you, Chair.
Concerning expected credit losses.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair, I was struggling with my mute button. So I understood this to mean opportunity loss, Chair, not expected credit losses.
Could you kindly put on the video unless that's ruled out by the data or connectivity issues you have?
I am trying.
Oh, there you are. Yeah, there you are.
Right, thank you. So, Chair, I was saying I understood the question to be around the opportunity cost. I don't know, Honorable Dutoit, if I'm understanding correctly of the wrong pricing.
If I may, the wrong pricing structures where money was obtained from another institution, basically loans that were made by the land bank and then given to individuals at a reduced interest rate. The previous engagement we had, this was a huge or a large deliberation because there was this fluctuation. I mean, it's evident from the report that we received today that there is a loss, and a loss has been occurred as a result of the wrong pricing model. I think the question is, with respect, straightforward. What is the expected loss in rand value for this wrong pricing model, for money that was borrowed and then handed over to individuals at a reduced interest rate? At the end of the day, the land bank must carry the loss. Well, South Africa must carry the loss because we're bailing it up.
Thanks for the clarification. I think maybe I need to take a step back, and I think Farid touched a bit on it. So the challenge that land bank faces is not so much so that we borrow money at a higher rate and lend out at a lower rate. The challenge that we face is that I think it's more a contracting issue. So the way we've contracted doesn't necessarily enable us or allow us to pass on the full increase in the cost of funding to customers. So if you look at how normal banks work, what they would do is, if you take out a bond as an example, or you buy a car, they will give you a rate that is, as an example, linked to prime. And every time prime moves up and down, you either get the benefit or if it increases, you pay more. So on a net basis, the bank doesn't lose out. Land bank has a challenge that we're not able to pass on the increase in the cost of funding because of the way we've actually contracted. So even though when you look at the pricing model, it's structured in such a way that the pricing is indeed at the margin, but the slightest movement in the cost of funding has an impact of compressing our margins. And that's where we find ourselves. So to give an example, with the default or default position that we're in, what is happening is the funding liabilities that are not being repaid as a result incurs higher interest rate. And so that's why our margins are compressing more and more. That's the one part. The other part on the pricing model itself, so Land Bank undertook an exercise to actually review the pricing model and update to make sure that if there were any gaps, those are closed. So that process has been done and closed off, and it has been taken through the governance processes, it's been signed off, and it's been implemented. Where we experienced, maybe to give specific numbers, when this exercise was done, about 11 billion, when we actually did the previous budget, around 11 billion, especially in the SLA space, was identified for repricing. It was, in some areas we were successful, in some areas not. And these are some of the influencing factors that contributed to a decision to insource some of the books that are managed by intermediaries, because we couldn't successfully reprice all of that 11 billion that was identified for repricing. But I think the main issue is more the contracting than the other way around. In terms of the quantum, the best way I can try to quantify that is basically to look at what we had planned from a budgeting perspective for 2021 and what has actually come through. So when I look at our interest line, it's probably around between 100 and around 120 where we potentially could have repriced in terms of the opportunity cost of not being able to fully reprice the components that we had identified as being potentially available for repricing. I think I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Unless there's anybody else, I think we should draw to a close. We've covered a lot of ground today, thanks to the colleagues from the committee and the responses from the board and treasury. Poppy Intaka is actually on our platform right now. What I would like to suggest is that in the second half of the year, we call the land bank back. Now, it depends, of course, whether the local government elections go ahead and what amount of space and time we have to have a parliamentary program as against campaigning for the elections. So if we do have the space, I think we should call back the land bank. We also have to consider there are four bills in the pipeline on the NA side. At least two of them, I would imagine, will be with us early in the new quarter. So let's see how it goes. But Poppy, what we want is for you to review today's meeting and the answers we got, and also what we did in October last year. So before we invite in Nkululeko, the land bank the next time, we should have a framework and a specific set of questions so that we don't cover the same ground yet again over the last two meetings, last October and now. We move forward. So when we invite the land bank, they must have a keener, clearer sense of what it is we're seeking to find out. And so I think that draft document, Poppy, should be available by, look, there's plenty of time. You can take the time over it by early August, and then you should bring it to the committee, and we should look at it and add to it so that when we invite the bank again, if we do this year, but certainly next year, we have a clear set of issues we want to raise with them, besides just getting an overview of progress since the last time we met them. Okay, Poppy's here, so in particular, you'll ensure that that gets done in consultation of Poppy and Esther. Having said that, may I take the opportunity then to thank everybody for their participation, Mr. Maloto and his team, and to wish the Land Bank well in making yet further progress before we meet them again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye-bye.